GSF 90.1 in Burnaby, British Columbia, broadcasting from the unceded territories of the Coast Salish peoples.
Welcome to Guerrilla Radio, recorded March 22nd, 2023. While this weekend passed, the British Columbia Federation of Teachers held its annual general meeting. On the agenda, the election of a new president and an opportunity the BCTF Divest Now campaign had to platform its efforts to pursue a practical pathway to cease their pension plan's investments in fossil fuels and other life-killing industries. Jillian McGuire was a presidential candidate in the poll held March 21st. McGuire is a longtime teacher who, over a 27-plus year career, estimates she's launched more than 5,000 students into the world. She says she was shocked to discover the teacher's pension plan was heavily invested in some of the most ecologically destructive businesses, and so co-founded BCTF Divest Now. Jillian McGuire in the first half. And we often forget everything beginning on the land ends in the sea. As desperate the situation of terrestrial pollution is, in the ocean the effects are amplified, concentrated, and brought back to us as inevitably as the tides. Captain Paul Watson has spent a lifetime on and in the service of the ocean. Now Watson is helming a new venture, the Paul Watson Foundation, whose mission to save life in the sea is simply stated, if the ocean dies, we die. Paul Watson and finding a way to protect and defend life in the sea in the second half. But first, Jillian McGuire and British Columbia's teachers instructing their union to listen and learn to divest. Welcome to the program, Jillian.
Hi, Chris. How's it going?
It's going great. It's a beautiful day here. Tell me, Jillian, yesterday the BCTF AGM wrapped up. It was the Divest Now campaign's chance, as I mentioned in the intro, to put forward your platform of divestment. How was that message received by the membership?
Well, it was pretty interesting because at the beginning of the AGM, there was not one climate message anywhere. None of the people running for any of the executive positions had climate or divestment in their bios except for me. And it was kind of almost like once we were in that building, climate change didn't quite exist. But then as the campaign started going on, you know, I had a number of people come up to me during the time that I was campaigning for president and thank me and tell me I'm doing the right thing, getting this message out. And then, you know, throughout the campaign, I think the message just started to build such that at the end of the AGM, our second vice president was up at the mic to speak to the divestment motion, to speak for it. So I think over the 4 days of the campaign, you know, divestment became a little bit cooler than it was at the beginning.
Well, personally, how do you come to this issue? Is this because you're just an environmentalist yourself and you think this is a serious issue, as of course it is, or has this more to do with your students and this next generation?
Yeah, so I wouldn't describe myself as an environmentalist. I just describe myself as a realist. You know, the IPCC report came out just a few days ago saying that if we don't reduce our emissions by 50% in the time that it's going to take a kid to go from grade 5 to grade 12, that those kids will absolutely not have a livable future. And so I think you know, it's almost psychopathic to not put the climate crisis at the forefront of everything that we do. You know, nothing else matters right now. The kids do not have a livable future if we don't do this. And I have children and I've sent over 5,000 kids out into the world. And so it's just something that we have to do.
Well, I'm sorry to say that it's been a very long time since I was a student. How would you rate the awareness level of environmental issues amongst, like, what age bracket are you teaching, and what is their awareness level, would you say, of the environmental crisis?
Well, you know, what they call the young people now at Generation Z. I don't know if there's one that's been tacked on after this, but like the last generation, these kids, they are all aware that they may not have a livable future. And it comes out in writing assignments. So I teach high school. So for example, if I give the kids a creative writing assignment to do, I would say around half come back with a theme of, you know, an apocalyptic future due to climate change. So they're sitting with this all day in everything they do. They have this awareness in the back of their head that the adults in the room haven't taken care of their home, and their home is going to get more and more challenging to exist in.
Well, I remember being a teenager, although that's a pretty dim memory now. But when I was a teenager in school, it was the middle of the Cold War. And mm-hmm. we thought that nuclear annihilation, it's funny how mm-hmm. things come around, but yeah. we thought nuclear annihilation was imminent, almost inevitable. And yeah. so what's the point? We had no future. And the music at the time, I know that we'll talk about your band in a little bit too, but the music, especially coming out of Britain at the time, you know, there was no future. There was no more mm-hmm. future for us to look forward to. Is this just a feature of teenage years anyway, generally from generation to generation? Or is there something quantifiably different, do you think, in yeah. what you're seeing?
Well, I've been reading the book Generation Dread, and it talks about this, about the difference between, you know, nuclear war and climate change. And I think it's like, with at least with nuclear war, we were aware that it was going to be a person had to get their finger onto a button to make that happen. The climate catastrophe is all encompassing, and it's 100% certain. It's not a maybe. And we have to mobilize pretty much the entire world. You know, seeing how difficult it was to get a divestment motion just on the floor at the AGM, you know, with scheduling and Robert's Rules of Order, it gives a lot of power to the people who set the schedule and the resolutions committee. And the divestment resolution that we passed almost got put to unfinished business. And that's twice last year, it almost got put to unfinished business as well. And so, you know, it's just even within our own small area where the people in charge are tasked with educating and nurturing the younger generation, even in that system, it was difficult to get a divestment motion will take our money out of the fossil fuel companies that are responsible for destroying our students' futures. It was really, really challenging. And a lot of people worked on this. Like there was, you know, people going up to the mic all the time to get it back onto the floor, to, you know, to challenge the chair, to do all of these things within the rules of Robert's Rules of Order, just to get it. And then once we got it up, then of course the teachers voted for it.
Yeah, well, it's an institutional inertia, could be the yeah. end, the end of us all, you know.
Yeah.
Well, what is the what's the formula within the BCTF for a motion to pass? Is it 50% plus one?
For this one, it's 50%. To change an agenda, it's two-thirds, I think it was, but for this just required a simple majority.
Did they tell you what the percentage was, or was it just an up or down result that you guys got?
No, I think it was around 63%,
almost around a super majority. So what happens next then, Jillian? So this the BCTF board has been served this notice that mm-hmm. okay, the membership wants the pension plan to divest of these yeah. investments.
Yeah.
What happens now?
Well, the resolution set, so they can only lobby the teachers pension plan to change the SIP, which is this the investment procedures. So they have the resolution said that they have to develop a plan to fully divest of fossil fuels before 2028, so 5 years, and they will have to report to the Rep Assembly on what that plan is. So it's a lot stronger of a resolution than we passed last year. And, you know, the executive have definitely been given their marching orders on this. We want the teachers want a livable future for our students.
That's something that I was wondering about. I read that in your materials that this had already been passed once. Why did it have to be passed twice?
Exactly. Okay. It was the first resolution was to lobby the TPP to divest from, to get BCI to divest from fossil fuels. And the past president, so not even current president Clint Johnson, past president Terry Moring sent one letter to the TPP board, and then that's what they called lobbying. So that's not what I call lobbying, but that's what they called lobbying. So then when we got to the resolution, we thought, okay, well, how can we make it stronger so that they have to do more than just send one letter?
Well, I know that the Canadian Pension Plan Investment Board, the pension plan that all working Canadians contribute to on pain of imprisonment, they invest, their investments, they have a corporate structure, and they say, well, sorry, the rules say, the law says that we can only invest in what we deem to be the most profitable businesses. Yeah. And if that's war making and if that's oil burning, well, that's just the way it is. Sorry about that. But they got the best returns. Does the teacher's pension plan have a similar rule in place?
Yeah. So it's BCI, British Columbia Investments. And apparently British Columbia has the most challenging rules and the most legally binding rules about it, everything only being in the financial interest. But IEFA just came out with their full report. They did a full study of BCI, and they have recommended divestment for financial reasons. Corporate Knights did a study, and they found that if we had divested 10 years ago, each member's pension would be worth about $18,000 more.
So not only is doing the right thing right, but it's also profitably.
Which is why, I think that even a lot of the retired teachers are in support of it, right? They've studied these numbers as well. I'm not sure. Well, I guess I do know what's going on in the background. We live in a petro state that that wants us to stay committed to our extractivist policies.
Well, now, does the Divest Now campaign that you co-founded, do you have a game plan, you know, assuming that this was going to go through at the AGM? Do you have a point-by-point helpful guide for the pension plan to follow if they are sitting there wondering, oh, this came out of left field?
Well, I wish we had a playbook, but we're taking it one step at a time. And we do have some really, really good allies in the financial sector, in the divestment sector, some people who are experts in fossil fuel energy transfer and how this worked, and have worked with other pension funds to divest. So we are more than willing to share our resources, and we'll be contacting the BCTF EC to sit down and see if they'll sit down and talk to us about the plan, because I think we can put a really good plan together. But we haven't been super successful at getting much engagement from them before the AGM. So I don't know, maybe this AGM will change things, because I think the temperature of the BCTF in the BCTF AGM did change over those 4 days. So hopefully they'll respond, and we can assist them with this plan.
And the EC is what, executive committee or executive council?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, okay. Yeah.
Well, this is it. When you get into these structures, that you inevitably lead to cliques of people that would rather not be told what to do.
Yeah.
Do you have any mandated powers as the membership to induce the executive to not stall or just send off a single letter saying we'd like this to happen and to actually get the ball rolling?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think it's, we're going to have to really develop some sort of strategy to lobby individuals that do have the power, and also try to get people into these positions of decision-making, with the decision-making power. Like, we need to, get people on the pension board that are friendly to divestment and that have, knowledge of climate issues and how serious it is. It seemed that a lot of people weren't really aware of the extent of the climate catastrophe.
Does that surprise you?
I mean, it always surprises me, and it especially surprises me in a group of educators.
Right.
Right? Like, we're supposed to know stuff.
Yeah. Well, if you've just tuned in, you're listening to Guerrilla Radio. I'm speaking today with Jillian McGuire. Jillian was a presidential candidate in the recent poll. It was held just yesterday, March 21st. She's a longtime teacher, over a 27-year career, she says, and she said that she's launched more than 5,000 of your children, British Columbia, into the greater world beyond, educated and ready to go, hopefully. She also co-founded the British Columbia Teachers Federation Divest Now campaign, which, as we've just been talking about, managed to get a resolution passed to divest the teachers' pension plan from the fossil fuel industry and other life-killing industries. What are some of those?
I mean, we have already divested from tobacco. We did that I'm about 10 years ago, I think. And a couple of people came up to me after the resolution passed and said that they worked on the tobacco campaign. And it was the exact same thing, the exact same difficulties and challenges. But then we know that the people who worked on the tobacco campaign just then hopped over to fossil fuel. But other life-destroying industries.
Well, that's important not to speed over. Those are like the PR companies and everything. They're using the same strategies that
they're
saw.
They're the same people.
Yeah.
And then, you know, we're looking at infrastructure projects like, Trans Mountain and Kinder Morgan. And eventually, I doubt banks would be covered in under this resolution, but banks that fund these companies as well, we would want to.
Well, and deforestation too. I remember the TD Bank was hugely invested in deforestation here in British Columbia and elsewhere too, of course.
Yeah.
Well, Jillian, I was looking at your got your article up there, and this was why I'm running, before the presidency, and I was reading it. And then I went down it point by point, and lest people would accuse you of being a one-issue candidate,
right?
Divest Now comes down as the sixth issue on your list.
Yeah.
It's clearly with the few years that we've just passed with the COVID and everything else that education has been going through probably the most disruptive period ever. But there's a lot of other issues that didn't even appear on the top six either, the COVID thing. But
yeah.
Tell me some of the other issues that you were running for and what parents and just people in British Columbia that would like to see the kids that live here be properly educated. What are some of the other issues involved?
You know, I think it's all part of the same thing, the same whole. It's like the kids are being looked at as natural resources to be exploited. And so we've defunded their education. We're, investing our money in companies that destroy their future. We can't even fund, some air filtration to keep them safe during, the world's deadliest pandemic that we've seen in our generation anyway. So we really need, I just really think that all of these issues are speak to a need to change our philosophy around how we treat our children and how we prioritize them, their health and their future and their education, their ability to know stuff, and to learn in a safe space.
Well, and even some more prosaic issues like books. I see that you say that you actually have students that are sharing textbooks. Is this possible?
Yeah, that's just standard. Yeah, they don't get to take them home because they have to share them with another person and with other classes. Yeah.
Well, that surprises me. I was a bad student. I'll admit it. And I'll go to detention once we get off the air, but I'm well used to that. But we never, when I went to school, had to at least share textbooks. We got our own books.
Yeah, get your own book. Yeah. Well, no more. There's just, the money is either not coming. The budgets are smaller, and there's a lot more going to administration.
That's incredible to me.
Superintendents and directors of instruction, and district principals, and all those kinds of things that really, as a classroom teacher, you don't hear from there. There's these parallel societies going on. There's the classroom, and then there's the parallel sort of management structures across. And I think that's the same in in like hospital management now. And it's just how it works. Like management is growing, the bureaucracy is growing, and it takes just a little bit more each year out of the classroom.
Well, what about demographically? I know there was a big dip in student populations for a while, and I think it's rising again now. But do you know the demographics, like where the student population numbers compare now as, say, a generation ago?
I really couldn't speak to that. Our school's gotten bigger, but gotten more people. But then it's a nice new seismically upgraded school. So
a nice new school, but with no computers.
Yeah. Yeah, no computers and not very many textbooks, but the building is nice.
Well, that's great. At least it won't fall down.
Yeah. Hopefully.
This is painting a picture, and I know I'm treading on thin ice here, but I mean, this is like the global South here, where we often see commercials. Well, these poor students, they don't have books, they don't have computers.
Yeah.
Well, we needn't really look far to find that situation.
Yeah. No, it's happening.
You mentioned course, that you're a musician, and you mentioned that there's no music anymore. I remember that was an issue when they cut music.
They've cut the band and strings program in elementary school. And we have a great music teacher at my school, but it is being, deprioritized. Like music programs, you really should be running with allowing them to run with lower numbers. It should be a core subject. Instead, it's sort of an extracurricular that only a few people take. And if not enough people sign up, then the courses get cut.
Well, and you mentioned too an SBRT, and forgive me, but I don't know what that means.
That's school-based resource team. So they do the IEPs and make sure that the kids who have learning disabilities designations get the attention that they need, but they're really overwhelmed.
Jillian, in looking at your work now, if I can veer a little bit off, but bring us back to the core before we end, because we've only got a few minutes left.
All right.
But I didn't want to leave before talking about Arrest Stories. Do you want to explain what Arrest Stories is?
So I interview people who have been arrested for climate action. And, on that podcast, there are some of the most educated, brightest, most morally upstanding people that you could imagine, just telling their stories about being just regular people who just one day had to do something. And so they started protesting, and they've been arrested. Many of them been to jail.
And Tim Takaro, who's been on this program, is one of them.
Yeah, Tim Takaro is awesome.
What's his story?
Well, Tim started the tree sits and delayed the Trans Mountain pipeline for like 15 months. I think it was 15 months. And he's an expert in the health related consequences of climate change. So, and he just said, like, I got to do something. I got to stop this pipeline. It's going to kill children and it's going to kill everybody. And so he went to prison for a month for that.
And that's not all. You're not an environmentalist, but you are an activist in a sense.
Yeah.
And part of that activism comes out in music, as I mentioned earlier. Do you want to tell people about Tiny Milkshakes and how that came about?
Well, Tiny Milkshakes, it was me and Jay Pei. We are longtime friends, and we just started like playing music at the jam space. And then he said, we should have a band. And I'm like, oh, awesome. So he switched over to drums, and then we got bass player, Dan McKinn and, Karen Ingehammer started singing more cause she's got a really great voice. But yeah, I'm just, I write a lot of the songs, and they're all about, dismantling the patriarchy, getting going on climate change. Every time, I have an experience where somebody, upset me or I was just outraged at something, I usually turn it into a song. So I'll be working on, some songs from the AGM, and I'm also in court on a mischief charge. I've got one more day on April 12th. So I feel like this has been like my punkest month so far.
Well, maybe I can have an arrest story interview with you then when you're done.
Yeah, absolutely. That would be awesome. I'll get in touch with you after April 12th. I mean, this is the third day of a 3-day trial for like a 15-minute sit down on the road. So it's like real state overreach.
Don't tell me all of it. And I promise you, I'll tell you my arrest story at the same time.
Yeah, let's talk about them.
The band you can find at tinymilkshakes.bandcamp.com, which is where I found you guys. And I recorded one of your songs. Can I play it without being sued?
I definitely will not sue you, and it's also on the Spotify and all of them, so but yes, absolutely. I will not sue you. Go ahead, which one are you gonna play?
captain, because the next guest in this program is Captain Paul Watson, and so I thought it might be if I can squeeze it in,
absolutely.
Because
this
there's more.
Song. This is Dan McKim's song, and so absolutely play captain.
Yeah, well, but we got to go quickly then, because you're also an ultimate frisbee world champion.
Yeah,
how did that happen?
Well, just like I started playing in my 20s, and after college,
everybody started doing that. Not
it's
everybody,
true, but I just got really good.
I'll say 5-time national champion, 2-time world champion, ultimate frisbee player. My God.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Okay. Now I promise before we leave, we've only got a couple minutes left. How can our listeners get involved? How can they urge the BCTF to push things along?
I think all social media posts, tag BCTF, get it out on your social media. The resolution passed. We want to see action. We want to see change. We want to see a livable future for our kids. We want our pensions divested as quickly as possible. And we want to get started on a cleaner path.
Well, Jillian McGuire, you're an inspiration. Your Medium page, medium.com, at JillyMag5. You can go and see some of Jillian's writings. Thanks a lot, Jillian, for coming on and for fighting the good fight. You got 20% of the vote. That's a first-time rank and filer challenging the old boys network. That's a fantastic result. You got the resolution passed. So, that's amazing as well.
My first time on the mic at the BCTF AGM was to give a presidential confession speech where I got 20% of the vote. So I'm pretty happy.
Well, that's not bad at all. 20%. Yeah. That's a pretty good. And the winning guy, what did he get? 40 or something, or 35?
I got 20% of the votes. There's only two of us.
Oh, there was just the two. Oh, okay.
There was just the two of us. So, it doesn't sound big, but I'm assured that it was. And I think there was some concern that I might actually win.
Well, I think it's massive. And thanks again for coming on. And I want everyone else to, everybody else, stay tuned, because I'm going to speak with Captain Paul Watson, past of the Sea Shepherd Conservation Society. Now he's got a new venture. He's left the society, and but he's not finished yet. Thanks again, Jillian.
Yeah, thank you so much, Chris. And let's talk again when I'm done with court.
Can't wait.
All right. Okay, cool. See ya.
Bye.
Their message always to everybody through all their advertising, all their PR, everything is, we are your friends. And it's like, no, you are not our friends. Friends are not people whose bottom line is how much profit they can make out of you. It is completely different.
Guerrilla Radio, knowing who our real friends are since 1999.
We're running out of time to put out a fire.
See you again. care.